I was reading an article in Business Day recently which revealed quite a novel data-driven network approach which sheds light on how offshore finance flows across the globe. And we know that there's been an outcry over tax avoidance. First came the Panama Papers, then the Bahama leaks, and journalists continue to shed light on the offshore financial centres that companies are using to reduce their tax bills, and something that is still being challenged in court, I must stress. Now, to find out how it all pieces together, I'm joined by Timothy Mertens, Chairman of Sovereign Trust. Welcome, Timothy.
Thank you very much. Nice to be on the show.
Now, we've seen a new study uncover all the world's corporate tax havens and for the first time revealed the intermediary countries that companies use to funnel their money into these places. We know the likes of your Ben Nevis trusts that end up in all of those islands that are considered tax shelters. But what we haven't known before this was the conduit countries. Now, if we have a look at how these structures work, just take us roughly through how money finds itself to these offshore tax havens.
Well, it's a complicated area, and I suppose at the start, I would say that there are a number of different jurisdictions around the world. There are probably hundreds that provide services where there is a reduced taxation or at least a benefit in taxation. And traditionally, you know, we've always thought that it's the Bahamas and the British Virgin Islands and the Turks and Caicos Islands of the world where all this money sits. And obviously Guernsey, Jersey, Isle of Man are very well known to us as well. But, you know, it's interesting that there is a lot of money that flows into other sort of more traditional jurisdictions. So, for example, like the UK, the US, the Netherlands, Malta, Cyprus, those are all jurisdictions which, you know, have a lot of services in relation to tax reduction. They offer lots of incentives for companies to set up there. And I would say probably the bulk of those activities are in those sorts of countries and not necessarily, you know, in the British Virgin Islands and Cayman Islands of the world, although obviously they are very important offshore jurisdictions.
And it's important because if you're looking at what measures one can apply, then one has the ability to apply measures in those conduit countries, which are generally highly regulated, and it will be quite interesting to see how the EU approaches it from here. But I think what I'd like to understand is how these tax havens actually end up with the funds. How does Apple's money get from California to Bermuda anyway?
I know, and that's an interesting example because Apple, for example, did a deal with Irish Revenue, and they pay something like in the order of 0.5% tax in Ireland. And the idea is that the profits are not actually generated in Ireland, but they're channeled through Ireland, and the tax rate in Ireland is. You know, extremely low. They bring to Ireland obviously a lot of employment. There's a fair amount of credibility in having a big company like Apple in a place like Ireland, and therefore there are incentives. Now, the European Commission has obviously jumped on this and has basically said, look, this is not tax harmonization. There isn't a level playing field for tax. It's not fair that Apple, a big company like Apple, can go to a place like Ireland, Dublin, and pay such a tiny amount of tax when, in fact, you know, the tax rate would be considerably more in its home country in the US or in any other country where it operates. So there's a massive debate on about that at the moment. And certainly, as I said, the European Commission has looked at Google, Apple, and others, and saying that they actually have an unfair advantage over their rivals because they are in a position to do deals with local revenue in these sorts of countries.
And it certainly does mean that targeting what are deemed in this report to be conduit OFCs rather than the sinks where the money eventually ends up could prove far more effective in stemming tax avoidance.
That's right. I mean, you know, and this is a major concern for especially the European Commission, but other bodies as well. I mean, another example is that, you know, your listeners may be aware, but many, many big corporates set themselves up in the Netherlands. And the Netherlands has a very, very wide double taxation treaty network. So if you are Intel or Apple or any of these big conglomerates, if you set yourself up in a jurisdiction like the Netherlands, then there is a reduced withholding tax on activities that you might then have in other parts of the world. The profits then coming back to the Netherlands, and withholding tax then greatly, greatly reduced as a result of the double taxation treaties. So, for example, if you're doing work, inbound work, providing inbound services, for example, to the US, and you strip out a profit, then normally there's a withholding tax of around, in the order of about 30%. But if you do it through a Netherlands holding company, then that 30% can go down to zero. And then in the Netherlands, the tax is fairly low, and then there's no withholding tax out of the Netherlands. So it's that sort of planning that I think has been going on for quite a long time. And obviously, these multinational bodies and intergovernmental bodies are looking at obviously reducing this and bringing the taxes more in line with other countries.
Eating into that double Dutch sandwich, as it's called. How much tax is actually being avoided here? What sort of sums are we talking about globally?
I mean, I would hazard a guess. I don't have specific figures.
Well,
but I
think we're all guessing when it comes down to this, but it's fairly educated.
Yeah, it is an educated guess, but I mean, it's definitely tens of millions of dollars or pounds or euros or whatever denomination you're dealing in. Because if you think about it, the taxes in the jurisdiction concerned are very, very low. I mean, if you look at Ireland and Apple, you know, 0.5%, when really they could be paying 20%, 30%, 40%, maybe, you know, in that sort of order. So there are vast savings for taxation that can be undertaken. And I think this is, you know, one of the big issues that these intergovernmental bodies are going to have to grapple with, because obviously these companies bring employment. It's, as I said earlier, you know, quite nice for small jurisdictions, especially to have big corporates operating in their territory, and they certainly do get a benefit. But then it is seen to be unfair that you know, these companies have an advantage for taxation just simply because they can do a deal with a local revenue authority.
No, absolutely, it's about leveling the playing field. And I've seen a number here, which is an estimate of the Tax Justice Network, and it's also part of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, that if we were to look at multinational profits where the economic activity takes place, they would pay a combined, and it's a quite a big ballpark here, but between $500 and $650 billion more on taxes each year, and of that, around $200 billion a year would go to developing countries, which is more than they receive annually in development aid, which is at, I think, around 140 odd billion US dollars. So it's an extremely important issue, particularly for developing countries, for companies operating in South Africa, and perhaps making use of some of these structures. What would your advice be? I mean, obviously this is an unfolding area of tax structuring, but quite clearly it looks like the loopholes are closing and the noose is tightening around that sort of tax planning.
That's absolutely right. I mean, there definitely is a very serious look now at what we call base erosion and profit shifting, or BEPS. And that's a situation where, you know, foreign companies come to a local onshore jurisdiction, they do business there, and they strip the profits out of that particular country. They utilize that country simply to make profit, but the profits don't actually sit in that country, and they don't, you know, have the benefit of the local economy. So that is referred to as base erosion and profit shifting, where you're shifting the profits to another jurisdiction where there is much less tax. And certainly there are task teams at an intergovernmental level at the moment, and I think this is filtering down to local tax authorities to try and stamp this out and to really look at BEPS and get you know, proper BEPS reporting, so that there isn't this you know, this abuse in some cases, not in all cases, but abuse in some cases where profits simply are shifted elsewhere where there is a benefit of lower taxation.
It is quite complex, though. We've got issues of transfer pricing and whether or not it's simulated or legitimate. And I think it'll be quite some time. But no doubt that if your structuring is just to take advantage of some of these double Dutch type sandwiches, then it looks like your lunch may be about to be eaten. Timothy, thanks so much for your time and for shedding a little bit more light on what's happening in the world of global tax avoidance. Do take care.
Thank you very much.
That was Timothy Mertens, chairman of Sovereign Trust, talking tax to us here on Classic Business. Well, it was all about China this morning and some of that data really rocking markets, rocking commodities in particular. But as the day wore on, the Rand started trading in a very narrow little band, obviously eyeing the outcome of that secret ballot, that vote of no confidence in number one on the 8th of the 8th, this eighth attempt to get rid of him. And in his eighth year, I mean, the four eights all lining up. I've got Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager at Ashburton Investments. You're not a numerologist by any chance, Wayne. Can we read anything into that?
No, but it certainly is interesting, and numerology has got a